honor Women's History Month with International Women's Day being next week, I'd like to introduce our moderator and a woman who is definitely taking the lead in our community, Kim Jackson, the Executive Director of the Institute for Strategic Policy Solutions at St. Petersburg College. Ms. Jackson received her bachelor's degree in political science from Spelman College, a law degree from Stetson University, and a master's in international public policy from Johns Hopkins. She's practiced here locally in St. Petersburg, advocating for many nonprofit and family-oriented agencies. Our community is evident from her continued service on so many boards and not just law, but she's certainly a member in the community amongst a number of organizations and leads on serving as a board member as well. And for our guests, thank you for stepping into the Lion's Den today. We greatly appreciate you. Our panel of women leading their organizations include our current City Council Board Chair, Brandi Gabbard.
Very poor in Indiana, small town Indiana. And I was born to a single mom, lived with my grandparents, and that was really my support system. It's a small manufacturing town of a lot of people that are just really, really hardworking. And so for me, the message always was, you will be successful as long as you work hard. But what happens a lot of times, especially in small town communities, is that there's very little opportunity to do more than what you're kind of born into. I was very fortunate at 18 years old, because I had that work hard and you will get what you want, I had the opportunity to go and be an exchange student in Japan. So I went from small town Indiana to as far of a different world as you could possibly imagine, and lived in Japan for about 6 months. That changed my life, because what it did was it opened up an entire world to me that showed me that you are so much more than what you were born into. And so through that one opportunity that I was given, and I could bore you with the details of how I went around and I raised money from all the small businesses in the town to be able to afford to pay for it and yada, yada, yada. What I learned was that when you are willing to work hard, people will give you opportunity because they trust that you will make something of it. So fast forward, I was just working really hard, went to school for musical theater, that was my major. My minor was Japanese humanities minor. How I ended up here, Lord only knows. But through that journey, every opportunity that was ever given to me may not have necessarily been what I thought my path was going to be, but there, a door was open. And I just walked into it. And I said, okay, I'm gonna take this and I'm gonna run with it. So I fast forward to, I was about 26 years old. I was already working in corporate management for a very large company, and my job was eliminated. But at the time they said, so we have an option for you. Do you wanna move to St. Petersburg and help us down there? I just said yes. And so here I am, 20 years later. So through that, very fortunate that I fell into the world of real estate. I'm a very successful real estate broker. I have been for a very long time, 17 years, almost 18 years now. And what I learned through that business and that role is, once again, working hard. But the opportunity that presents itself through providing the option of homeownership to people. Through that world, I got into advocacy. And advocating for private property rights, advocating for affordable housing, advocating for flood insurance and affordability in that space, led me all the way to working with FEMA at the national level. I've done a lot, and I say I've always done it because I've been a worker bee. You give me a job, I just get it done. So then somebody said, do you want to run for office? You're already going and you're already advocating and you already know these issues. Do you want to run for office? Well, you're insane, but sure, why not? Worked hard, knocked over 5,000 doors in this city, got to know the residents of this city, got to understand their perspective, what they're looking for in representation, what they need, what they don't need, what they don't want, and from there, built a platform that I have since been able to do incredible work in the city council with. So I just say my entire journey is all about opportunities being handed to me, but me taking them and working as hard as I possibly can every single day to do what's right with them. And so far, so good. So thank you all.
I will say, this journey has been one I never expected in life. I'm one of the very, very lucky people that knew from day one what I wanted to do in my life. I wanted to be an artist. At age five, I told my parents, I'm gonna sing, I'm gonna make music, that's what I'm gonna do. And my parents said, well, maybe you should come up with a backup plan, just in case, that's a very hard thing to do. And I said, when and if I fail, I will. And I'm 35 and I've never looked back, and I make music every single day. And so I'm so lucky and fortunate that my journey has taken me there, but I stayed focused from a very, very young age. I was very lucky to have parents very supportive of my dreams, very supportive of the things I believed in. Even to the point of finding alternative types of education. I grew up in Pinellas County, I'm a Pinellas native. My parents moved here from Boston, and they supported me wholeheartedly. I started working in the music industry very very, very young and started working professionally at age 11. By 13, I had my first recording contract, and by 14, I was traveling throughout the state of Florida and the country, working with bands and musicians from all over the world. I started to take early college entrance classes at age 15, and was doing college while I was working professionally and writing music, and I started majoring in music composition, music theory. And I thought that my journey was going to be that I would be on the road, that I would be on the road with roadies, and I would go out and I'd be writing music with other musicians, which was my dream. And I loved every second. At age 19, I was very involved in the National Association of Recording Arts and Sciences, otherwise known as the Grammy Association. And I was taken to California for 3 weeks, where I worked under the direction of Ricky Miner, who is the Tonight Show band leader for over 20 years. And he was a phenomenal artist. He helped me expand on my music writing skills, and I got to work in work with film composition as well, the first time I was out there. And so I was really immersed. And then all of a sudden, my world took a turn, and I came home for in between, and my mom had gotten very ill. She was stage 3 cancer, and we thought we were going to lose her. So I stopped music for a while, stayed home. I became kind of her caretaker for a while during that time. Married my husband very, very young, had our oldest daughter, and I changed my college degree to creative writing. So I was already using composition. I had already been writing for several years, and I changed to creative writing, which led me down this path to theater. I never thought I would do it. I thought I was a musician. I didn't think about musical theater. And I started, my mom was sick at Moffitt Cancer Center, and she told me, "Lisa, I think you need to teach." And I said, "Are you nuts?" I'm a musician. I'm not going to teach. There's no way I'm going to teach. And she said, "Well, I think you need to teach. And I think that you need to look into doing these musicals." She had found all these musicals and different things that she thought I should do. And I said, "Well, Mom, if we get through this chemotherapy treatment, we'll think about it." And she did. And we started at the Tampa Bay Performing Arts Academy that year while she was still going through radiation. And I started teaching in a local church, just a couple nights a week. And I absolutely fell in love with the art of teaching. And I fell in love with being able to share my gift of music and art and dance with the students I was working with. And I fell in love with it. Did not want to stop, and our organization kept growing. We started as a 501c3. We were trying to use music and the arts to reach out to, particularly my love, middle schoolers. I struggled a lot in middle school. I wanted to see the other middle schoolers had an emotional outlet for what they were going through, a place, a home, a place to be, a family away from family that could support them and give them what they need. And so that was a dream of mine that I thought I would do much later in life. Was lucky enough to be able to do that in my early 20s and start working with all sorts of students from all walks of life. I've been doing that now for 15 years, I think we're going on 16 years. I've taught over 1,000 students in our local community from all walks of life through musical theater. We put on probably 30 shows a year at our little theater up in North County, and we love it. I work with my mom, who's made it through cancer. She's 15 years cancer-free. And we're so lucky to have an opportunity to do that. So through that journey, as I had my children, what brought me to politics? That's another question for me. In my family, I'm probably the least likely person to enter politics. As you said, I'm an artist, and I love music. And my family is very intellectual. I grew up around politics. It wasn't something I was very interested in. But when my children were in school, I joined the PTA. My oldest daughter was in elementary school at the time, and I wanted to see certain things happen in their school. I was trying very hard to be that volunteer. Whatever you all need, I'll come in, I'll work late, I'll do the extra work. And every time there was something I saw, I kept getting the answer, "Well, that's a county decision. So that's a state decision. That's not something you're gonna do on the PTA." And I finally got to the point where I started to see many, many good families leaving these wonderful local schools. We had this wonderful neighborhood school that we worked very hard to get our children into. It was a wonderful place in the community to be. And it bothered me to see so many good families leaving to go to charter schools, leaving to go to private schools. And I asked the question, well, why is that? Why are we going to these other schools when we have these neighborhood schools here? And the answers were very similar from lots of parents I had worked with, students I had taught. And I thought to myself, well, I could do what they're doing. and move my child, or I can try to make it better. And I was raised that you always try to leave the world better than you found it. And I thought, well, I know about politics. I think we can make this better. I think I'm going to run for school board. And everybody thought I was nuts. And I thought I was nuts. And I did. And I ran. And we ran a very successful campaign. And we made it. And now that I've been on the school board, this will be my, I'm going into my fifth year. I've seen how so many incredible people donate their time and how we as a community come together in Pinellas County to make it such an incredible county. And I'm so thankful to be a part of the process. And I am hoping that in my tenure on the school board, one of the things I would love to get done is to increase our music education for our elementary age students, to see that they are getting that from the youngest ages possible to increase their scholastic ability as they grow. Because we have such an incredible referendum and incredible support from our county with arts, not only visual arts, but performing arts. And I see it helping high schoolers everywhere to get into better colleges, to have better opportunities. And I want to see us continue that work in the middle school and elementary schools, because what I noticed with my children going in is in the younger grades, they weren't getting as much of that development, and I want to see them from the earliest ages grow with that. So that was what led me to politics, what led me to this journey, and that's where we are today.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies. You all have such interesting, interwoven trajectories. I always think about women, we usually have a common theme, work ethic, values that shaped us, of course, family influence, and how we fit, right? So I want to talk from a real perspective of how you do it. When you're talking about challenges, I know a lot of women get that question, how do you balance it? You know, what challenges do you have? And often women will not be very transparent or candid about some of the challenges they have, both professionally and personally, as they navigate difficult careers or careers where they're first in those careers, or where there are not that many of us in those careers. And Christian, we will start with that question of, you know, being as candid as you feel comfortable being about obstacles, professionally and personally, in your path to get to where you are.
Yeah, I sat on a panel a number of years ago and listened to some very high-profile women all claim that none of them had ever experienced discrimination in the workplace. None of them had ever been marginalized or told, you know, that their opinions weren't important. And actually, I was super frustrated at the. I knew these women personally, and I knew that our conversations behind closed doors were very different than what they were willing to say on the stage, and probably because of the companies that they represented. So I get that. The one thing that you will find from me, I'm new direct to your community, I'm developing relationships with many of you. I will always tell you exactly what I think, so don't ask if you don't want me to say exactly what I think. And I was a trial attorney in Las Vegas, and Las Vegas, there's still 20 families that run Vegas, and much of what you see in the movie Casino is very accurate, at least until some of the corporatization that occurred in the 90s and forward. And even then, it's still, you have to have the blessing of a certain group of people. I was as a trial attorney, 97% of the trial attorneys in Las Vegas were male. And with the name Christian, people on paper always assumed I was a guy. I was taking a deposition one time. I walked into the room and the attorney turned to me and said, "I'll take my coffee black." I walk up, I have coffee, brought it back in. And this guy's watch, he's like, "Well, Jesus, are you even here?" So yeah, I'm ready to start. I sat down. He didn't object the entire day. So when I had a daughter, I was like, "What family name sounds either way?" So my daughter Anderson. Could be an Andy with an I, or a vertebrate, or whatever she wants to be at 12 years old now. And if she later wants to be Anderson, she can, and I love that. I was denied paternity leave by three different supervisors in a university. And it wasn't that they were malicious or malevolent. My first one had never had kids. 45% of female faculty members in colleges and universities don't have children, because your biological clock and your tenure clock are kind of running at the same time, and we don't create flexible policies to support women. And so my first person who said no just didn't know. So typically a 16-week semester, I took on an overload, I taught five classes. I was on a 2-2, I should only have two classes. I taught five classes in 10 weeks. I scheduled a C-section for the day after my final. never occurred to me that the kid might come early. Fortunately, he follows directions. So that worked out well. My next supervisor, I wanted to move into administration. And he said, well, it's great. I'd love to have you as an associate dean, but I'm not waiting 3 months for this. And so I had a C-section and returned to work 4 days later on a part-time basis. And friends of mine would be on the floor. I was breastfeeding. I'd be pumping in my office. And people would knock on the door. We hear you. We hear your machine. And they were trying to bond. They just didn't know how. But it was not a comfortable situation. And I was also still practicing law. I sat on my case of Coca-Cola as it pumped in a broom closet. And a place to take a deposition because they didn't have spaces where the only space available was a bathroom. I don't know how many of you prepare your meals in the bathroom, but I didn't want to prepare my child's meal in the bathroom. And the third one was just, I actually, ironically, had been very involved in banking in Asia and just couldn't understand why anybody would take time off. I had a C-section on a Thursday, I was back full-time on Monday. Now, I'm an attorney, which is twofold. I know you can't do this. I know what's involved in litigation. I know how people are labeled. I know how this impacts culture and morale. And so instead of it being a moment of frustration, I use that work attitude, I can do, I'm a worker bee, God help you if you tell me I can't accomplish something, because that's the only thing I want to focus on then, right? And I use that to screw it up and do it, but I also use it to inform who I am as a leader and the type of environment that I create for my people. When I moved to the president's office at that institution, I passed a campus-wide stop-the-clock tenure policy for all of our faculty, male and female, so that they have the ability to focus on family and still have that progression to where they go. So I think that, you know, much like when I go to a restaurant, and I'm from hospitality, folks, I will bring everything back to food. If I go to a restaurant and I have a bad experience, I will say something. But I think in order to do that, I have to have the obligation that when it's a good experience, I have to say something, mm-hmm. right? And so my philosophy has always been, if I'm gonna have a negative experience in how I'm perceived as a woman or as a female leader, I wanna be able to turn it around into a positive on how we treat each other and the culture that we create within an organization that supports everyone.
My pivot skill, if you will, is like jumping. So when I've hit obstacle along the way, and a prime example is the opportunity that I was given to move to Florida and start working on an expansion of the company that I worked for at the time, I was hired under two very successful men who really were given a lot of pats on their back for really other people's work, if you will. And I became one of their other people. And I was working, and I was working, and I was working 70 hours a week, and I was making it happen, but then every time I turned around, it wasn't good enough, or I was being marginalized, or I wasn't being paid my worth. And that's how I found real estate, was because I met someone who was very successful, another woman, and she said to me, like, you're working 70 hours a week for them and they don't appreciate you and they're gonna continue to work you to the bone, or you can do it for yourself. You can spend that 70 hours a week working for you and your business and your goals. And I was terrified. And I remember I went home and my boyfriend at the time, who I had convinced to move to Florida with me, and I said, I'm gonna quit and I'm gonna try this. And he was like, what are we doing? Like, what is this? But it worked. I did, because I knew that I had what it took inside of me to see it through and to put in the hours. And even in those moments, as I built that business and I found opportunities in that business, I became a manager for a franchise. And the broker, whenever I decided that I wanted to have a child, my husband and I, we were a bit older. I was 34, he was 36. I said, you know, guess what? I'm pregnant. And the response was, oh, well, you can't have a kid and do all of this. I was sitting on a board of directors for the Pinellas Realtor Organization at the time. I was the youngest person to have ever sat on that board. I'd been on that board a couple of years at that point. And I was told, like, if you decide to go have a child, all of this is gone. Like, you can't do any of And I said, oh, I can? Okay. Well, I can remember sitting at that board table, very pregnant. I can remember bringing my six-week-old child to a board meeting once upon a time because I didn't want to miss any, and ultimately became the youngest president they ever had. And I did that as a young mother. But I did it because someone said, oh, if you make that decision to go and have a family, how dare you? Your career will be gone. And so then I fast forward to whenever I became a city council member, I was the only city council person at the time who had a young child, who was raising young children. And I remember knocking on a door and talking to a constituent and asking for their vote, and she said to me, why aren't you home with your child, letting your husband do this? So it's not just men that marginalize, it's women too. And so those are the moments in time when I say to myself, you gotta keep going, you gotta keep working, you gotta prove that, and I don't believe in the you can have it all kind of thing, because there's always sacrifice, there's always something that maybe you didn't get to quite do all the way. But if you stopped every time someone said, you can't do this and that, where would we be? And so for me, it's always been about continuing to move forward, continuing to jump in and just keep doing the work, because I know what I'm built of. The people who say, no, you can't, they don't know what you're built of. I know what I'm built of, and I can continue to move forward. So that's my pivot.
I relate so much. Because I think I've been through a lot of pivots in my life, because having people do tell you, and I've heard the same thing, if you have a child, you're not going to be able to have a career. I have been told that from a very young age. So once you have a child, that's it. You're just a mom. That's all you can do after that. And you start to believe that. And actually, in my younger life, I didn't want to have children because of that. Because so many people had said that to me. I didn't think that I could be successful and be a mother at the same time. And when I had my oldest daughter, I hadn't built anything. And so I thought it was over. There were 2.5 years I cried every day because I thought I couldn't be in there more than that. And so I relate so much to what you have to say, because I was also 20 years old and I hadn't finished my education. I hadn't achieved any special career at that time, and I had no money and no prospects. And so when you're sitting there at 20 years old with a baby in your arms and nothing but responsibility, and you think you can't be anything, I'm here to say that you absolutely can. Because from that point, I picked myself up and I learned how to look at the glass half full. And so for me, it's about glass half full. That's how you pivot. You can't look at what's wrong with the situation, you have to look at what's right. And I started to change my way of thinking, and that changed my path moving forward. I learned how to work and have my baby right there with me. She came to work with me. I was gonna do it. She was gonna sit there. Then I had my son. And then I had another daughter, and then I had another daughter. I have 4 children. And they've all come to work with me since they were born, every single one. In the carrier, I worked pregnant, and they've been with me. And you know what? They love it. They've been a part of me their whole life because they were with me. And they sit in the back room, and I made a room for them, and I brought people in. And so they grew up listening to music, listening to people sing, listening to the joy of that. And they themselves have found the joy of that. My youngest is 7 years old. My oldest is turning 15 this week. And they have had an incredible journey with me along the way. And so I remember my first campaign, and also being in politics is something that's very difficult to do with children, because most of the meetings are children are not really welcome. So I was that person bringing in the kids in the back of the room and hoping to God that they weren't going to make noise the whole time. And so I understand what that feels like as a mom. You're hoping it's not your kids in the back that are making that disruption. But I brought them. I just brought them with me. And I just looked ahead and said, you know what? This is important. And it's important for them to see me doing something for the community. they're going to learn how to be leaders that way if they come and they watch me do it. And they're going to learn how to do what you love if they sit and watch me give lessons to other kids. If they're there watching me do what I love, they're going to learn to do what they love. And I kept telling myself that through the journey. And I remember there was many, many days very difficult to have them there with me, but I thought it was important. And I thought it was important for them to learn. And they learned how to be better citizens because of it. They learned how to adapt as well to the environment that they were around, how to behave and how to be quiet in those situations. And so I remember actually, I had a woman, and it was an opposite experience, but in my first campaign, I remember standing on the side of US-19 with my signs trying to, just campaigning. And I had my three-year-old, she wasn't in school yet. So my other three were in school. I had my three-year-old in the carriage next to me. And I'm just standing out there covering her, hoping she didn't get sunburned. And and I had a lady pull over on the side of 19 and come up to me and say, "Are you running for that?" She said, "You go, girl. You're showing everybody. You can be a mom and you can run for office. Absolutely. And you're bringing your baby." She took a picture and she posted it on social media. And she said, "I saw this lady today. She's out there with her baby. So don't say that you can't step up and do something." And she really inspired me. And honestly, I didn't even know who she was, but she changed the way I felt about what I was doing, because I thought, wow, if I'm inspiring her, then I know I'm doing the right thing. I know that I'm helping other people reach their potential by working hard and doing what I know is right. So that's my pivot.
I have to say that I shared almost everyody in the story. I'm very transparent and brought my children everywhere. And I have to say that, at least for me, the Bar Association was really generous to me. I had a lot of those same similar challenges. I'm very grateful to my peers in the bar who allowed me to raise my daughter in an environment which was very challenging. But I related to literally everything you all said. And I think that's important for the next question about, have we broken enough barriers so that women can just walk in the room? So I'd like to speak to you about that. And also with that, as we start pivoting to allow members from the den to ask you questions, what have you discovered yourself about being a woman, particularly in public life?
On the ability to walk in, breaking barriers, you hear about the glass ceiling. I've done a good bit of research, particularly looking at representation of women in workforce, particularly in hospitality. Typically, you'll find women in feminized areas, HR. If we're talking about gaming, men typically are represented in casino marketing, women are more in the account room or something like that. And I interviewed a woman who was vice president at IGT, who I thought, and this is probably 20 years ago, but it sticks with me with what she said. She said that women moving forward is not anything related to a glass ceiling. She said it's like saran wrap. A few poke through, but that doesn't open it for everyone. And when I think about particularly the representation of BIPOC women, right? You know, I know that I've suffered challenges. Women of color, I know, suffer less wages than I get, and I'm getting 72 cents, right? Typically, Hispanic women, for example, make about 69 cents to the dollar in the same job classification. Part of it is we don't teach ourselves, or we aren't taught, how to advocate for ourselves, how to negotiate. We're frequently, and sometimes it's trained by parents, not these women, but sometimes our parents have trained us to be, you know, be quiet, don't make a fuss, don't ask for stuff. And so I think that's where mentorship is incredibly important. You know, I think everybody's had an instance, and honestly, a woman popping by on the side of the road going, "At a girl? Man, that'll feed you for weeks, years, sometimes, right?" And so the role of mentorship, whether it's formal or informal, whether it's just that at-a-person moment that somebody makes you feel validated and seen and heard, and then that responsibility to do that for others, to make sure others have that. And this is not to marginalize the experience of men as well. You know, I would imagine men in nursing, for example, feel very, very similar in terms of the marginalization. All right, and so how do we just support each other in what we're doing? We're on a shared journey. We all want to do right by our families. We all want to do right by our communities. We all want to make ourselves proud. We want somebody to be proud of us. So how do we feed into that? I think that that's a really important piece. As to the question about public life, I'm not in politics. I'm glad I'm not in politics. I,
I have three kids. They aren't always the quietest. There will be one joining me later today because I got to take him to soccer and he's going to come to a meeting and sit quietly in the room. Maybe. It is difficult because our society does not have grace for oopses. Nobody in this room has not made an oops. It's just when you're public, those oopses are very much on display. And we don't have a tendency to want to give people the grace or space to make a mistake, learn from it. Nelson Mandela said, I never lose. I win or I learn. And I love that, right? Because we should have the grace and space to sometimes oops and learn from it and demonstrate the redemption that becomes the story for the people that we do mentor and for our mentees, for people to be proud of us in our own growth. And so I think that would be my focus on that.
Thank you, Brandy.
What was the first question again?
First question about breaking barriers, like how we broken enough barriers.
Well, absolutely not. I'll come back to the public life. I got that one. Absolutely not. And I'm even sitting here proud to say that I have the opportunity to sit on the first super female majority city council. Mm-hmm. And I still don't think that we have grown. And that was the Amy Foster and the Darden Rice, and these big personalities, right, that you take on the world, and I still don't think we've done enough. Because oftentimes, those same women leading are characterized as too strong, too harsh, not approachable. Those are the kind of things that I think until we change the way that we speak about women in leadership, then we haven't done enough. Because it's all about, it's the things that, no offense, men, but no one would say it about you, right? If you were in a negotiation, and I've experienced this in the real estate world, I'm in a negotiation or we're having a challenge. I see Amy here, who I've done transactions with on the closing side. I know she's seen it. You have a challenge and it's a woman against a man, and God forbid he be 10, 15 years older than you, then you're wrong. Little Missy, you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. If you honey me in a negotiation, you're in trouble. But that is the stuff, right? We are still, in this day and age, still treating each other that way and not honoring experience, intellect, and the ability to lead and be an expert in a topic. We still don't do that the way that we should. So until we start doing that, no. I love your saran wrap. You're right. We've never broken through that saran wrap, which I hate, by the way. So. But as far as public life, the one thing I can tell you is don't read anything anybody says about it. And learn that the hard way. And I won't even to share the dirty details on that. But, the unfortunate part about that is it's the people that love you that read those things, and it breaks their heart, right? And I've known fantastic leaders who have just stepped away from that and have said, this just isn't for me. I can't take that, especially after the last few years that we've been in, where it's just everything, every word you say, people hang on, and they can twist it, and they can turn it, and they feel safe to do that because they're sitting behind a keyboard. And so you, as the individual that they're talking about, have to make a conscious decision to ignore it. When I started down this journey of politics, because I never wanted to be a politician. I wanted to be an advocate. I was an advocate. When I started down this journey, I had to have a good, long look at myself in the mirror and say, you are never going to sell your integrity for this. You are never going to take a vote based upon whether someone will vote for you later. You are going to do what you believe is best with the information you have at the time. And I know, because I had to revisit that conversation in my head time and time again, that I can say that that is what I have done. Like it or not, I know there's lots of things I have said and or voted on that people didn't necessarily agree with. But I hope at the end of the day, they always know I did it with my integrity, and that is how I see myself through public life. Because otherwise, I don't think I would be who I am today.
Okay, so you get the last word on breaking barriers, mm-hmm. and your discovery about yourself,
public life, and then we're going to pivot, and we're going to ask some questions from our day.
Sure, we're running onto time here, but breaking barriers. There is a saying in the music industry that many people don't know, but it's in regards to going out there as a woman in an industry full of men, which I've been doing for many years. And it is, you need to walk out with the face of an angel and the hide of a rhinoceros. Because the daggers that will be thrown at you will come from every which angle. And so I take that mantra with me into politics. Nothing anyone says can penetrate that skin, because you have to know what you're worth and what you're bringing to the table. I think part of the barriers, the reason we haven't broke down some of those barriers, is what we value as success. We value aggression as success. We value that kind of aggressive, in-your-face strength. And when people have a quiet strength, when people have are offering their gifts, their talents, what they bring, we tend not to value that as success. And I think until our society can recognize that, women are going to have a difficult time, because women are everywhere at once. We're not just thinking about work, we're still thinking about our children. We're still thinking about our life at home, and that comes with you into those decision-making processes. And I just think that in general, you know, men leave that at the door, or we're there with our children in the back of the room wondering, are they going to make a noise while I'm trying to answer this question? And so all those things are going through your mind, and I think that we need to value that most women do think that way, and that's okay to think that way, and there's nothing wrong in thinking that. You don't have to change who you are to be successful, because you don't have to fit this mold to be successful. You can be who you are and be success. And if you can find who you are and value that, that's what's going to make you a success, not becoming something that you think resembles success.
I can't thank you all enough for being so transparent. It is hard to be transparent in this space, and so I value your ability to tell your truth. And with that, we're going to open it up to questions.
I want to make sure you state your name clearly, ask your question, don't give a speech. There's leftover food, please help yourself to it. And the trash cans are to my right for your plates and your cups. Thank you. Yes, ma'am, where you asking?
I actually said questions.
First. You got a question?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You can ask 14 months. Here we go. We're going to line over here and ask your question, please. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Teresa Jones. And given the fact that we just completed Black History Month and we're entering into Women's History Month, my question is for all three of you. I'd like to start with Delaney. It's regarding the fact that we now have some gubernatorial policies that have been put in place to, in my opinion, marginalize people of color, and as well as those that may be in a different sort of sexual orientation. I'd like to hear your opinion about the removal of votes from the school systems, the removal of DEI policies that in our universities and possibly throughout our state.
So this has been a very hot topic issue for us on the school board, as we see groups being marginalized, we see books being taken out, we see this cultural war being exhibited throughout our state. I think we need to remain vigilant in first understanding, I always tell people, first understand that most of the information their children are getting is not coming from the library, unfortunately. We need to make sure we have intellectual variety in our libraries. I think that is very, very important. And if our students are looking to read, to expand their horizons, to see things from new perspectives, we need to have those available. They need to see things from all perspectives, to be well-educated, so that they can formulate their own decisions. So what do we consider education? To me, it's the ability to be a critical thinker. The ability to become a critical thinker on my own and to teach someone else how to do that. You give a man a fish, he eats for a day. Teach a man a fish, he eats for a lifetime. And I think we need to teach our students how to take in information and think for themselves, not tell them how to think, not tell them what to think, but to teach them how to think. That is what true education is, and that is the kind of education that I would like to see our children have. As we battle what is going on in the state, I know that it's going to be a journey as these things continue to evolve, as they're continuing to evolve now. We have HP1, we have SP2 up in Congress now. I'm actually traveling to Tallahassee in 2 weeks to go up and to lobby for our county for different things that we would like to see happen here with pre-K of education and so on. But I'll be lobbying and also be joining the FSBA, the state school board, to talk to our legislators about some of these bills that are being passed. I hope that as they continue to make legislation, they continue to look at ways to implement curriculum that do not take away entire groups of people. I think we can't do that. We can't do it, and it's wrong to remove entire groups of people from our education. We have to be educating people about allowing them to critically think on their own. That's really
okay. Thank you. We can try and limit our responses to about a minute for each question that's asked, so folks get to answer.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that.
No. Okay, Marilyn Miller, my question is for Lisa King. I'd like to know how your DeSantis pledge to educate, don't indoctrinate, and reject the use of critical race theory in the curriculum. How do you use those feelings or slants of vision with your co-board members and your constituents who may not feel that way?
Well, I think you need to first, I think it's important to understand what that means, and that critical race theory is teaching one particular point of view, and as I said, I believe that we need to allow people to have different points of view. I think that is very, very important. And parental rights are very important because each parent is going to have a different idea of what they want their child to have. There has to be a place where there has to be a middle ground. And that's what I believe we need to come to. We can't be coming from one side or another side. It's a very divisive issue. There's lots of parents, and every parent has a different way of raising their children. And we need to be respectful of that, need to be understanding of that, and inclusive of that in the best way possible. And so I think that for me, parental rights is about each one of us being valued. And I think that there are definitely those in the community who don't agree that that is what parental rights are. I think there are those with a different point of view on what that is and also what critical race theory is. And so I think that we need to define those things both in the state but also locally as well, so that we can have a clear vision of what those terms mean.
So I think Teresa's initial question was for all of us.
Yes, ma'am.
So I just, real quick, because I'm not in the education space, so I don't have that particular answer, but just for philosophically speaking, my viewpoint is that we should not be creating legislation around what I would consider to be like the boogeyman, right? Like, critical race theory was not being taught in schools. However, we created laws around it. You know, the grooming of our children and things, that's not happening in schools, but we're creating laws around it. You know, all of these things that we're creating this culture war about that isn't actually happening, I do not support in any way, shape, or form. I also do not support the whitewashing of history. We don't make it go away just because we stop teaching it. It still happened. And the way that we don't continue to marginalize and discriminate and treat people poorly is by learning from our mistakes and moving forward and knowing that we can do better. And so I don't support any of that business happening in Tallahassee as it pertains to those culture wars.
We've got to have uncomfortable conversations where we stop talking.
We've got to look at it through the lens of social innovation, not shame. When you tell somebody they should be ashamed for something somebody did in their family in the past, they shut down. That shuts down conversations. We've got to continue talking, and it's hard and it's uncomfortable, but I think it's important. And that's what universities are about. They're for civil discourse. They're a platform for people to bring forward different ideas and for us to examine them and correct precedents. And so I'm hopeful as we come through the end of session that what is ultimately passed is something that's still workable and can still be the core mission of what we're accountable for.
Thank you.
What woman in politics, past or present, do you admire most and why?
I'm going to start off with actually Rita Long, the president of USF. Mm-hmm. This is a woman who graduated from high school in Tampa, wanted to go to college, was working at a telephone company, and realized that if you worked at USF, you got 6 credits a semester for free. So she quit her job at the telephone company, got a job working at USF. She worked there for 10 years to get her undergraduate degree. She then cashed out the retirement savings that she got as a state employee to go to Stetson Law School. And she has built it on her own. She was the first female chair of the board. She's the first alumna president of the university. Coming to see these 3 campuses led by 3 women to me was really inspiring, looking at the level of leadership. And she's very much a public figure, very much in the politics of it all, particularly with her work with the board. So that would be my understanding.
Well, I've been very fortunate to work with a lot of incredible female leaders. We are surrounded by them every day here in Pinellas County, especially having over 200 local elected officials. But I would say, I mean, if I'm looking at somebody on like the national stage that has just done incredible work with their life, kind of maybe a cliche answer to some, but I would certainly say Hillary Clinton, because if you watch her documentary that just came out in the last couple of years, what you start to understand about her is that everything that made her great or makes her great, her intellect, her ability to be able to just like push through and get things done are all things that over time people tried to diminish in her. People tried to change in her. People tried to change the way she dressed. They tried to change the way, make her softer, and she never gave into it. And for that piece right there, I immensely respect her.
I'm going to say there's a couple of local leaders that I look to for advice and for paving the way, one of which was a former school board member. She was on the board for many years, well, a few years way back, and she was one of the leaders that helped me to establish kind of the road that I wanted to go in politics. And I think that she was one of the youngest school board members that we had, and she definitely paved the way for me. And her ability to stand up on her own, to stand against what others believed to be, to stand against the majority, to stand on her own, was what I found most inspiring.
As elected officials, there are a number of positions in Pinellas County that are nonpartisan and don't identify as a Republican or Democrat. There's been suggestions to change some of that. Do you want to see any of those positions changed so that they identify as Democrat, you know, Democrat, Republican, or partisan? And if so, which ones? Please, quickly.
I believe one of the main positions they are discussing is the school board members, as to whether we want to see those become partisan. I do not want to see them become partisan, as I think that our children is an issue that is nonpartisan. I think that we share so much common bond, regardless of where our we may be on the political spectrum, when it comes to raising our children, that there's more in common than there is in difference, in my opinion. And I think that it's a position that should be nonpartisan. because it should be putting the good of our children and our future at the helm.
So as it pertains to local politics, no, I do not want to see that changed. I'm very proud that I sit on a nonpartisan. I mean, yes, you all know like what we're registered as. I get that. But our job is to come together and represent everyone in the city. And I think that is much easier to do when you can put the partisan stuff aside and look at it issue-based, working on the budget, you know, being there to represent the greatest voice. And I don't think that making us run for one party or the other gets us any closer to that goal.
I've been here 7 months, so I'm not sure I know all the positions you're referring to. But I feel like I agree, and I'm not making a joke this time. I really do agree that there are just certain areas that identify. You can find out everything about people. Good Lord, right? You know, on the internet. So I don't know that that defines us. I also think we have to move beyond the idea that how you're registered defines how you feel about every issue or every aspect. And so having nonpartisanship, I think, actually helps benefit as we look at the whole of the issue and the people that we're representing and the role that we're playing in that situation.
Okay, so JC Lyon, I'm gonna ask real quick. My name is David Moran, board member, also a fellow attorney here. Christian, you were talking about, more so as a professor, having to obviously honk while your kids and everything, people knocking on the doors, interrupting you. Has, I'm kind of asking each question here, but has the universities, or at least the ones you've been a part of, have they evolved to where there are special education spaces for the female professors and staff?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, and yes, there are. I think we have 5 different lactation rooms on the St. Pete campus alone, just to provide those spaces for folks. It also impacts design. Through a period of time, we went to designing all offices with windows. Now, actually more for a safety issue, for active shooter kind of reasons, they're no longer doing that. And so that's provided also some safe spaces for folks who have office aspects.
Thank you. When you think about Dr. Kimberly Jackson, I'm already her hand.